away for the Tomiko Cheltenham Gold Cup. Bijou Diarra wins the Queen Mother Championship at the fourth attempt.
One for Arthur, it's holding on, brilliant, and it's one for Scotland.
This is the race that I've always wanted to win. This is the race that's in my heart.
One flight to go, Noel Feely can wait no more.
This is Love the Jumps Extra from the Jockey Club.
Hello, it's Abby here from Love the Jumps, and welcome to Love the Jumps Extra, our sister channel. Now, this week, it's Evan Williams. Here's the extended version of his interview with Rupert Bell.
Well, Evan, lovely to come down to your yard on a dreek winter's day, but I don't know whether that's the Welsh version for a grey day, but it's been pretty grey. I managed to get lost, but hey-ho. A week after Bywise, that must have just felt like a really good, feel-good story for you and the yard.
Well, it's great. I mean, any of those old boys that come and hit a bit of form, it's always nice when they win any race, but when you win a big pot like that, it gives everybody a bit of a boost.
And Bywise, easy horse to train? You've run him always in good races, but to get him to win on a regular basis, has he been one of frustration?
Well, I think he's overachieved, really, because people forget, I mean, he was never planned to be a high-class horse running in good handicaps. It was just a bit of fun, really, and he just kept improving, but kept hitting the crossbar, and we kept getting everything wrong. So we've had plenty of advice off plenty of people on how to train him, put it that way.
What advice have you taken? Are you a man who ploughs his own furrow and says, right, this is a quirky horse, but I'll stick with my instincts?
I would say other people would describe me as very ignorant to any outside influence.
But for Bywise to do that, in a series that has really taken off, it's great for these old chasers to have a big pot to stop the young guns who seem to be getting younger, always winning.
I think what I'm surprised at is the following these old horses get. I mean, the correspondence we have about Bywise is unbelievable. You know, we have texts and tweets and letters and emails and everything and cards and everything about that, you know, what we should be doing, where we're going wrong and this, that. And then when he runs well, we get a lot of support. It's quite unbelievable how much of an interest that the general public or the racing fans have in these veterans chases.
And is it easy for you to be in a bubble and not realise that, okay, you're getting up more, your morning, noon and night, you are with your horses, to realise that, and you're living and breathing, but actually there is a public that do love what you are doing with your horses.
Yeah, I think this is the first time I think that I realise that, you know, that how important a part we play in other people's enjoyment. And I'm genuinely, it's heartwarming, really. The result's heartwarming, but the support that, you know, Bywise has had, is it does really make you sit back and think.
So that was a good story. New Year's Day, there was a slightly different story. Your poor jockey, one of those things. I mean, how hard was it for him to take, and what advice have you given him to sort of say, don't worry, kid?
Well, I mean, Adam took the brunt of it all, and I think, you know, look, at the time, for that 30 seconds I was angry, of course I was, but you realise that it's happened before and it'll happen again. Mr and Mrs Rucker are the same opinion. I mean, they were more concerned about Adam than anything. I mean, the horse was fine, and they were very, very, you know, concerned that is the main thing. But then after that, I mean, it's all about Adam. And because, you know, he again came into such criticism there, you know, on social media and bits and bobs like that. It's tough when something like that goes wrong and then instantly you're getting flack. But you've got to put it to the back of your mind. You've got to move forward, and you've just got to think, well, that happened, and move on.
Is that the reaction in social media? Look, we all do it. We know it's a necessary part of the game, but for the young jockeys, when they make an innocent mistake, or, you know, as he says, a brain freeze, that reaction felt pretty harsh on him.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big man for social media. We've a Twitter account or what have you that my son runs. I mean, I wouldn't have a clue where to start. Look at my old phone, you know, I haven't got a clue. But these lads are under it. The spotlight straight away. In the old days, I mean, somebody would write you a letter, but they'd have to sit down, wouldn't they, and write a letter, and then they'd half bottle out halfway through writing it and, you know, forget about the idea. You might get a punter throw a betting slip at somebody walking into the parade ring when they get beaten on a favourite. But now it's instant, isn't it? You know, you press that button on your phone and you can slate somebody straight away. So they've got more instant pressure than perhaps lads in the past used to have to work with.
I heard a story that you had something happen to you. Was it, did you jump a hurdle or something? What happened in a race that you may have been riding it?
Oh, geez, yeah. Well, I joined in. There was a foggy old day in a point-to-point in deepest, darkest West Wales. And me and a bunch of lads pulled up for, you know, because we were tailed off and a girl was keeping carrying on. We cut across the track to go back to where the lorries were. And just for a bit of crack, I joined back in. I had a bit of fun with the boys saying, I'll join in now and get a bit of prize money for this lovely old lady who'd never had a horse completed in a point to point. So I finished second. And this lady was overjoyed that she'd managed to get a horse to be second. And
you had to fess up, did you?
Well, I didn't. It was a foggy old miserable day. And somebody did, you know, did grass me out to the stewards. And I can remember it cost me £80. £80 I had to pay for it not to go to Portman Square. And yeah. I had to hold my hands up.
Those were the days. Now with on every race course, poor old Adam, his whole move was analysed. But it does show that these jockeys, you know, can be even someone like Adam making a name for himself and very much part of your team here and will be going ahead. Now you've obviously with Paul going back to Ireland.
Yeah, well, look, Adam's a great rider. Look, he's a very, very good lad. He's a good worker. He's very conscientious. He's a great horseman. And he made a mistake. It won't be the first mistake he's made, and it's not going to be the last. It's an unfortunate incident, but look, he's a very, very good rider. And you know, fingers crossed he can go on from this, learn from it. And there's plenty of winners to be had in the place for him.
You have had plenty of winners. Training down here in, not a million miles from Cardiff, You've made it work down here, and there's now the sort of Welsh racing scene has definitely been thriving. Well, there's Tim not far away, and obviously we know what the Bowens are doing. Does it feel good to be part of something happening down here?
Well, it's important that it was a success because, I mean, Wales for such a long time had little bits of success. I mean, there's always been good horses in Wales, but it's always been people with a small string, and it's always been sort of little raids into the heartland, as it were, across the Severn Bridge. But we've benefited, I think, really, that Wales has started to develop into a strong economy, and this corner of Wales in particular. I mean, Peter is remarkable in the travelling he does, and Rebecca, remarkable. You know, we're a lot luckier this way up because, you know, we're closer to the Severn Bridge, and it's a big help with the travelling. But it means an awful lot, really, to have been part of what hopefully can continue to grow.
Where you were part of a racing family?
Well, we were, I suppose you'd describe us really, there was always a racehorse or a pointer around the place. And we were a farming family really, but always heavily involved in horses. My mother and father and my grandparents and my grandmother's brothers were particularly prolific point-to-point riders and amateur riders in times gone by. And racing was always a part of what we'd done, but it was very much a hobby and farming was the number one.
And what has been the biggest influence in you as a trainer?
I don't really know. I suppose to some extent that I never really went about thinking of training racehorses as a profession. I never had a mentor, or there was never any great big plan. It was just something how things developed. And when the pointer pointing started to go well, it just, one thing led to another, really. There was never any big single person or event that pushed me, you know, to think I could follow somebody or, you know, be modelled by somebody. It was just things developed how they developed.
And so you as a family have a sort of natural affinity then with animals, so that's part of it. But in terms of training, has it been the sort of trial and error? What have you brought and building your own gallops and set up down here? How have you sort of brought it on so that you've got now 80-odd horses in your yard?
I was very lucky when I was point-to-point that I did manage to ride and go to some of the best point-to-point trainers in the country at the time. I rode a lot of point-to-point winners for Peter Bowen, who was in West Wales. I rode a good few point-to-pointers for Dick Bainbridge, who was in Gloucestershire, who was a master, you know, of what he was doing in that part of the world. And I rode a lot of point-to-pointers for a lot of small people who were doing little things right and little things wrong, and you sort of put the pieces of the jigsaw together. There was a real character, Rod Simpson, who came to train in Newport, and, you know, a real character, and definitely somebody you either loved or hated. But I had an awful lot of time for Rod, and I spent plenty of time there with him with bits and bobs of horses, you know, and helping him when I could. And, you know, you learn things from him. I mean, he was a man who trained some very high-class winners on his day, and you learned little bits and bobs there. So, you know, all little pieces, really. I was lucky, really, that I took little bits and bobs off them and then sort of went forward from where I was with riding the Pointer Pointers.
Do you, coming from that background, there's a lot of big-name trainers. Do you feel sometimes when people feeling comfortable on the scene? Do you know what I mean? When you're saying, right, I may be in Wales, but don't discount me. Do you feel like, do you know where I'm coming from
there?
Yeah,
I do, yeah. I think I've always been very insular, really. I suppose, and Welsh people are, I think, very insular, in as much as it's always been sort of, Wales has always been part of England that sticks out into the Irish Sea, and you've always...
You feel the sort of naughty cousin, that sort of the lesser cousin.
Yeah, you do, and I mean, it's a Welsh thing. It's probably a Celtic thing, you know. There's no doubting, you know, that most of us Celts have got chips on both shoulders, you know. There's no doubting that the Scots, the Irish and the Welsh, we've all got that sort of raiders mentality type of thing. But I've always been very comfortable where I am. It's home. I think that's the first thing to realise, you know. I'm comfortable where I am at home. And I've always been very comfortable sort of tipping away quietly and trying to not rise my head above the parapet too much, you know. National Hunt people are National Hunt people. It doesn't matter where you are, what you are. It's probably different on the flat, perhaps. I don't know anything about that job, but, you know, I'm a jumping man through and through, and it doesn't matter where you are or who you are. You know, if you love the jumps racing and you're passionate for jumps racing, there's always somebody in a racecourse bar that you can have a chat with who's got the same mindset.
When did you first go to a race course feeling comfortable on the big stage?
That's a difficult one to really... I mean, I've always felt comfortable to go racing and run in a big race if my heart and my head knew that we deserved to be there. It's never been that much of a challenge to me, really. I've always been very comfortable like that. I've always thought that, you know, at the end of the day, my horse is good enough to be there and I'm good enough to be there. I've never, ever suffered from any self-doubt as far as that is concerned. I'm quite a combative person, or whatever the word is to describe.
How ambitious are you?
Well, I wouldn't describe myself as ambitious in that bloodthirsty way, you know, business-wise, because I'm not really a business-ambitious person. I just got a lot of belief in that I think we can do the job. And I think we proved we can do the job. And I've always liked to take people on and have a crack at the job. You know, I've never been scared to take people on and have a crack at the job.
Your best training performance, do you think, with a horse? And don't say bite-wise from 2 weeks ago or a few weeks ago.
No, it's hard to say. We've had a lot of luck with a lot of horses that perhaps have won a very bad race. But, I mean, I think, you know, winning a Hennessy was state of play first time up, when I had plenty of good judges telling me you can't do that. And he went there first time out and won a Hennessy, and that'll take some stopping.
And state of play, he did you so proud, didn't he? I mean, he was people's, well, your correspondent. Here's National Bank. If I need you to get out of trouble, I'll back him each way.
Yeah, he was a very good horse to us. He came along at the right time, and he's a horse that'll always be very close to my heart.
And looking at your yard now, have you got another state of play, or is John Constable, which horse is getting the old Williams juices flowing?
Well, it's hard to, I mean, we're very lucky. We've got some nice horses. I mean, I think John Constable is a horse that's progressed beautifully this year, and he ran a good trial for the Champion Hurdle in Cheltenham last time on ground, which I thought he'd be well tailed off on it. So, I mean, he's a horse that could go and compete at the highest grade. And those horses, like State of Play, they're very, very difficult to replace. They're very hard to find. You can look all you want, but they find you. And you know, John Constable is definitely a horse that could run in a big race.
And particularly with this year's champion, Hulham, when you look over the Christmas period, everyone's this year's Cheltenham, there's head-scratching going on. So you're not frightened of going into that race and taking on the big, you know, maybe the perceived big guns.
Well, I think you have, you know, that's what I'm saying. You're asking me about, you know, do you have any worries or any, you know, are you frightened to go and do that type of thing? But when you have a horse that you go and run, and I mean, we're only beaten a couple of lengths by My Tent of Yours, giving him weight on ground, which is very, very soft. It gives you confidence to go and have a, it's not pie in the sky to have a crack at the champion hurdle now with him. Yes, he'll be 33-1. He'll probably be bigger than that, but he deserves to be there.
And for you, okay, you've won a Hennessy's, or Ladbrokes, whatever it is now. But anyway, you won it. You've been close in Grand Nationals. Do you look at the calendar and say, yeah, I want to win a Gold Cup, or just, if I get the chance, I hope I've got a horse good enough to really give a good account of myself? Or what is the real race that you say, I need that one?
Well, we've won a lot of big races. We've been very, very lucky. But if you'd asked me before I had those horses, would I be aiming to win those type of races, I wouldn't have been able to tell you, because a horse comes along and it sort of, the race comes along and you sort of plan to get there, and sometimes the plan comes off and sometimes it doesn't. Any of those classic races you want to be involved with, and you want to have a horse good enough to run in one, let alone win it. So, I mean, any of those top quality races, to have a horse good enough to take part in it and perform at the highest level, they're very hard to find. But if you can get one to win any of those big races, I'd be grateful.
When you've got 80 horses, do you think from those days when you were training point to point, now you've got 80, you think, this has worked?
I don't think we ever do that, really. Because, as I said, there was never any great plan. We never set out to do what we're doing. And I don't think we'll ever... I don't think I'm the mindset to ever think that we've done good, bad or indifferent. You know, I just think that we just keep going. And I think that's one of our strengths, really, is that we never rest on our laurels. You know, there's so much room for improvement. Honestly, we could train a better type of horse. I could train better. There's so much room for improvement on every angle. And it's just trying to get to the situation where you think you're old, grey, infirm, and you've done your best. And I think that's the key, is always striving to improve yourselves.
This is Love the Jumps Extra, brought to you by the Jockey Club, putting all profits back into British racing.